Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is a Wednesday, the 22nd of July, and we welcome you to the proceedings. Let me introduce our group to you this morning. Before I do, just a quick reminder, you can always join us, panel at WAMC.org. We always welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Big Joe. We've already spoken this morning, and I know that you're on top of your game, so I can't wait to see it.
Okay. I don't know how you know that, but thank you for thinking that. Malcolm Nance is here, counterterrorism expert and best-selling author. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Very nice to have you here. Bob Griffin is with us as well, Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Joe. And I hope you're going to celebrate National Hammock Day today. I think it's apropos for all of us to take a minute and be on a hammock. So happy Hammock Day.
How do you know that? How did you know that it's Hammock Day?
It's actually also National Hot Dog Day because there's a website that gives you all of the national days, and I'm curious.
All right. Well, good for you.
If you've got a bad back, maybe not so good with a hammock, if you know what I mean.
It's true. Yes, I do.
Rosemary Armeo joins us as well, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Morning. I'm upset. I'm not upset because I understand it, but I can't see my granddaughter because she's in Virginia. So they cannot come to visit. So disappointed.
So that is now, right now, is a quarantine state, right?
Yes, it's just been added to the list, exactly.
All right. Well, let's talk about stuff and let's talk about what is going on when it comes to the coronavirus. Again, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. The president held a briefing yesterday. Yes, we talked about this earlier in the week and it happened yesterday. He spoke for around a half an hour, slightly over, and he was alone. He attempted to single-handedly hit the reset button on the public blame he is facing for failing to control the novel coronavirus pandemic. 3 months after he abandoned the daily virus briefings and attempted to turn the country's attention to what he described as the great American comeback, Trump's low-key reappearance before reporters seemed to be an admission that his previous strategy had not worked. 6 months after the first coronavirus case was confirmed in the United States, and with almost 4 million confirmed infections, Trump's attempt to re-engage with the crisis and embrace public health guidelines marked a notable departure from his recent approach to the pandemic. We are in the process of developing a strategy that's going to be very, very powerful, Trump said Tuesday, reading from prepared remarks that did not include details of what that strategy would entail. He did say that he said it wasn't something that he wanted to say, but it would probably, quote, it will probably, unfortunately, get worse before it gets better. Something I don't like saying about things, but that's the way it is. Okay, Alan.
Tens of thousands of people are dead because of his inaction, because of his denial, because of his chasing his potential electoral victory. And there is nothing this guy won't do. So he tries it, it doesn't work. He turns around, he says, okay, everybody got to wear a mask. That's a patriotic act. It frankly made me sick to my stomach when I think of all of those people who have died as a result of his inaction. And the idea that there will be some people who will stick with him based primarily on racism, but on other things, it just makes me so sad, so unhappy, and so ill. I just can't get over the fact that he underestimates the American people to the degree that he does.
Bob Griffin.
I've thought a lot about it, Joe. And, you know, in a very perverse way, COVID may have saved the republic. You know, if you think about where our trajectory was, COVID has really laid bare the towering incompetence of this administration in ways that I don't think any other situation could have laid bare. And it gives us an opportunity to actually reflect on some real rot that we have in America right now, as far as our communities and as far as our race relationships, and frankly, as far as our relationship with our government. And Alan, I absolutely share your feelings, and I was also angry because all of the months that have gone by where a simple message about wearing masks would have saved people's lives, and now he's going to do a flip-flop. It shows how out of touch this administration is with both their responsibilities and what's happening in the world.
You know, you keep saying this administration, when it's one, in my opinion, I'm using this word advisedly, diabolical human being. Administration almost cleanses it a bit.
Yeah, but you know, Alan, it takes more.
Gathered about him a bunch of weak sycophants who have enabled him. And I fault the press for yesterday's coverage, which was, come on, 4 years. We are 4 years past hoping that there'll be some sort of pivot from Donald Trump. He has not suddenly had a change of heart. He doesn't feel any differently about the virus or about the American people than he did before. It's only the numbers going down in his polls that made him act at all. And if we're relying on leadership from him, oh, God help us. And one other thing, I don't feel out of danger. I don't feel like COVID has delivered us exactly yet, because it's what it's done is rushed him into plans. And the continued occupation, as Michelle Goldberg puts it rightly, of American cities by troops in unmarked uniforms is terrifying. And that's what we should be focusing on.
You are so right.
Mm. Bob, were you going to say something else?
I agree completely with Rosemary, and my only gentle pushback, Alan, is that Trump needs to surround himself with people who will carry out his plans. So that's why I use the term administration, because it's more than just Trump. It's Chad Wolf at DHS. It's Stephen Miller in immigration policy. If you look at the cast of characters that have been brought into D.C., they actually did create a swamp.
The fish stinks from the head down, number one. Number two,
amen.
It's so interesting to watch or to listen as we hear again and again about these folks who are temporary, acting. It's not as if we have people who are in cabinet positions who enjoy the prestige and the permanency of cabinets that we've seen before. Nah, it's all Trump.
Malcolm Nance.
Well, you know, I have to agree with everyone all around. And you're right. The word administration, even though I'm sure we're just using it, you know, in its standard form, does sort of sanitize the way that we describe these people. And, you know, I've written several books about it. They are right now a criminal regime. And we can, without any question, say that when the history books are really written, when the investigations are eventually carried out, that this will be the most corrupt regime in American history. I mean, just the number of people on indictments. I mean, they're pushing the convictions in the Nixon era only because the people in the Nixon era, the judiciary, the House and the Senate, had the decency to maintain American laws. Now what we have is a Senate that refuses to do its duty out of political survival, and 36%, a hard 36% of the American people don't believe a word of any of the realities as they exist here, and they are cult-like in their following of Donald Trump. But when it comes with regards to COVID, I have to agree. Maybe COVID did save the Republic, but, you know, someday they'll view this as a grand war between incompetence and a virus that kills without regard. But we will have lost 2 Vietnam worth of American citizens by the time this election will come around in November. The estimate right now is about 200,000 American citizens, your fellow citizens, your neighbors, and your statesmen, all dead. Mm. And it didn't have to be this way. And we need to start thinking from the heart that our citizens are dying as if they're being slaughtered in a war. And we don't seem, I mean, many, many people don't seem to care. And Donald Trump, first and foremost, considering that he gave well wishes to a woman that's been arrested for essentially pandering and pedophilia.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
And didn't say anything about the dead Americans.
Rosemary?
She's a pimp. He was Malcolm was struggling for a word to describe her. She was Jeffrey Epstein's pimp, and he gives her regards, well wishes, which might have been a cue to her to hang tight, and there'll be a pardon for you, as there have been for other miscreants. And he gave not a word of sympathy to all these thousands of dead Americans we've been talking about. Appalling.
You know, Rosemary, I read this morning that the four times that he's actually used that phrase in the initial discussions were Roger Stone, Mike Flynn, Paul Manafort, and now Ghislaine Maxwell.
Wow.
And you were being generous with a pimp because pimps have a little style, you know? But this woman is a child sex trafficker. And she was arrested by this Justice Department on suspicion of being a child sex trafficker, and Donald Trump wished her well yesterday. This would be the end of any administration, but so long as everyone treats him with these kid gloves because he has one-third of the American public that support him, we will get him praising more child sex trafficker pedophile pimps.
And you know what, Malcolm, he's had things to say about the original perpetrator here, not only the pimp, and said that he liked young girls and he basically agreed with them. That was extraordinary, which leads me to think there may be a reason. In other words, Trump may have something in the game, in the race, a horse in the race.
But boy, I'll tell you, if he thinks about pardoning...
Go ahead.
Yeah, Alan, you're hitting a good point, but I hope, and I have confidence in the American people, that if this president even thinks about pardoning her, that both he and the party are going to take a shot like no sitting president or party has ever taken.
Why would that be the dividing line after all that he's done? I mean, take a look, Bob, at what he has done to date. You really need to pardon a pimp to get over that line?
Think of all the times think of all the times we've said that. If he does this, if he does that, you know, and yet if he gets in bed with the Russians, well, that'll be the dividing line, won't it? In other words, Putin's great. The Russians are great. I fired the FBI director because it get rid of the Russian thing. You would have thought maybe that would have been the end. No, sir.
Yeah, no, it's true. And maybe I'm being a little bit Pollyanna-ish, but you know, I'm still hopeful that the American spirit and the American people will recognize what a huge mistake we have made and will fix it.
Really, you know, 36% of the American public right now are hardcore believers. And they said in the latest NBC poll, 36% said that Trump is handling the coronavirus well and that they believe him over the CDC and Dr. Fauci. There's your break with reality.
Yep.
Well, back to that break with reality. So the president comes out and says it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, which I think all of us knew or thought about. And so he's coming to that. But how long do you think he's going to stay with that? Because even as he started...
What time is it?
Well, right. As the minute he started to veer from his prepared remarks... He was casting blame on others and basically saying what a great job the administration was doing. I'm just wondering how long that's gonna that's going to last is if he says these briefings will be going on for some time.
Yeah, you know, listening to Donald Trump, Joe, is like sort of watching NASCAR. Is that you're just waiting for the wreck. If it wasn't yesterday, it's going to be today or tomorrow. I mean, I would go to Vegas and put money that he is not disciplined enough to stay with his teleprompter.
No. So what do they serve? What do they do? I mean, what purpose do they serve? And ultimately, will it mean a change in actually addressing the pandemic? And I don't know, God forbid, trying to save lives.
Yeah, I personally don't think so. I think it's all about his poll numbers, that the return to the briefing is because he's getting slaughtered in all of the polls, even the ones that are purposely tilted towards him.
Right.
And he really does not care at all about the coronavirus. And, you know, Joe, I was thinking also, you know, Trump, if you look at his history, every time that he's failed, and he's failed so many times, he's just declared bankruptcy and walked away from the mess. Unfortunately, he's in a position with the president that you can't declare bankruptcy and walk away from the mess, but that's exactly what he's done with COVID.
I just want to say, I know we only have a minute, Joe, but Charles has written me a note reminding me that Carter was polling 25 points of Reagan, Dukakis was 17 points ahead of Bush, Gore was polling 11 points ahead of Bush, Kerry is polling 6 points ahead of Bush, and Clinton was polling 8 points ahead of Trump. So there you go. This is by no means done.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. Your letters welcome at panel at WAMC.org. We have quite a few, so let me go to right. We'll go right to those, get to as many as possible here. Marty says, if Trump pardons Maxwell, it will not affect his supporters as well. Many of them believe that he is fighting a child sex ring run by the Clintons out of the basement of a pizzeria. We're way beyond any rationality here. Frederica said, I have never felt afraid of my own government until now. It terrifies me that peaceful protesters and bystanders can be kidnapped from the street with no cause. It reeks of dictatorship. When will he come after the rest of us that openly oppose 45? Hopefully the courts will intervene.
Bob, tell me about Chad Wolf. Where did he come from?
I'm sorry. Say the question again, Rosemary.
Chad Wolf. Tell me about him. How did he get
So when I worked with...
And what is he doing?
Yeah. When I worked with Chad, he was... I believe he was the deputy chief of staff over at TSA. And mm-hmm. I think he's been able to come into the position
evil.
Because, right.
Well, just so though, so anybody who's just tuning in doesn't know, Rosemary has had a lot to say about the TSA.
None of it good.
Go ahead, Bob.
he did get Senate confirmation, and frankly, he's the sort of the last person standing that was confirmed. That's why he's acting secretary, and then their deputy was. It couldn't get confirmed. Ken Cuccinelli wouldn't get confirmed through a GOP-held Senate because of his background. And you hit the point right on the head earlier, Alan, when you talked about all of the people who have not been confirmed, so they haven't gone through the process of vetting through the elected officials in the Senate, and that's a huge problem. But Chad came up through TSA, and if you had asked me in 2017 when I was still at the department whether he would ever be secretary, I would have laughed and said I had a better chance of being secretary than he would have, and I didn't have any.
Yeah, well, there's a little more to it than that. Chad, first off, this is a guy who got got through university on a tennis scholarship and came over to TSA after being a lobbyist to the U.S. government. He has no background. He has no experience. And by getting that position at TSA, and as you said, failing upwards, he's a commissar. He is a loyalist. And that is the only reason he's in that position. And he's making these statements about how the how the U.S. government and its law enforcement officers are going to hold firm, and they don't have to pay any attention whatsoever to state and local government officials. It's absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, I've been working in this game for over 30-plus years, and never I ever thought that I would actually see somebody who would revel in the role as commissar of what could arguably be called a secret police.
Yeah, and Malcolm, you're so spot on, and I didn't know that he was on a tennis scholarship, so absolutely kudos to that. I've learned something new for today. I was also thinking about this situation, and for all of the complaints about CBP, Customs Border Patrol, not having enough resources, they obviously have too many resources if they have enough people to go send to cities like Portland and Chicago that don't need them or want them. And this is showing how out of whack some of our federal spending priorities have become.
Congress has not done anything about it, so I fault them. And also, we have allowed Hillary wasn't wrong about a right-wing conspiracy. It's been training and building, apparently, on our border. Those are rabid Trump supporters, the Border Guard and people who work for ICE. And now we're seeing them let loose. Like Nancy Pelosi called them stormtroopers. I don't think that's a big exaggeration.
Ernie writes, go ahead, Malcolm.
Yeah, I just want to touch on this whole new paramilitary that we're seeing here. I mean, I spent my entire career monitoring and warning about paramilitary, ministries of the interiors all over the world, most predominantly in the Middle East and hostile totalitarian states, where they have, you know, a uniformed secret police, and then they have their real secret police who go around snatching people off the streets. This whole premise, and I was there when TSA, DHS was formed, was designed to create an umbrella administrative organization to bring in these disparate groups to synthesize counterterrorism operations and counterterrorism information sharing. Do you know what we're not hearing in this discussion is the FBI, the organization that actually has this job. Yeah. And Trump has cobbled together these really disparate people, Border Patrol guards, many of them. The only requirement to be part of this task force, what's called the Protecting America Cities Task Force, PACT, is that you had to be a graduate of the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. That's people who are running the X-ray machines at, federal courthouses. These people are being taken out of their jobs, have been cobbled together into this paramilitary organization without any true authorization in order to create a police force with arrest power that Donald Trump directed Ken Cuccinelli and, through Ken Cuccinelli, Chad Wolf to execute these. Right now, these operations are starting in Philadelphia, Baltimore. They claim they're going to do them in Los Angeles, in every major city in
New
the
York.
United States. This is the best, right, New York. This is the single best argument for the disbandment of Department of Homeland Security. Clearly, the mission of defending America should just go right back to the FBI. DHS should be a small, logistics and administrative hub, but they are out of control now. They are literally being used as a police force
America.
Against American citizens. Yeah.
Which is interesting, Malcolm, because that
really did get started in Germany. We are watching it here. I think those comparisons are more apt than ever, and I hate that. Where's Congress? Where's individual Republicans or Democratic senators standing up and saying stop? We have a bunch of mayors fighting against Donald Trump. That is not power.
Yeah. Where's Rand Paul? I mean, of all the people who suddenly can't find his voice, where the hell's Rand Paul?
And it's interesting, Rand Malcolm. Rand Paul spoke yesterday.
What? Did he? Okay, I didn't see that. But it's interesting, Malcolm.
Rand Paul made a statement about the police beat forces being on the streets, going after Americans, and it is the only thing that got Ken Cuccinelli, the acting director of Homeland Security, onto Twitter to beg his leave to say, these, what the police were doing there, how they were doing arrests prior to that, they would not say what they were doing until Rand Paul said something. But you know Rand Paul, tomorrow he'll be shuttling messages to Moscow for Trump.
Right.
Again.
Well,
he desperately needs those Republican senators. That's for sure. You know, he's got to make a deal in order to get reelected. He's got to extend the $600 or something like it. And when they talk, he gets worried.
Yeah, and you know, going back to an earlier comment from Malcolm, the fear when DHS was stood up, if you go back to the Bush administration, if you look at what Congress was thinking about when DHS was created, when you think about where Tom Ridge and even Secretary Chertoff were, the first two secretaries, this was the big concern, is that DHS was not supposed to become this this secret police, and that the concern about federal overreach in this area was one of the big debates about DHS. But I am sort of leaning to the fact that DHS may be fundamentally broken. And unfortunately, we've got a couple of agencies that are completely feral right now in both CBP and ICE that I think need to be cleaned out and rethought. Mm.
I'll make a quick comment about
this is part of the pattern of Trump, though, too, is that the post office, which is a constitutionally founded institution, he's undermining. The FBI, he has worked for 4 years to undermine faith in the FBI. All the institutions that are supposed to do the jobs, he's denigrated as deep state, and he wants these new found agencies. He is really exploiting all the powers of it. This is it's so terrifying, really.
Sounds like Putin's work to me.
Malcolm, you want to make a point before the break?
Yeah, I was talking about the militarization of the DHS itself. There has been a massive push in the last 10 years. You guys know I train a lot of state and homeland security agencies in counterterrorism. And it has just been utterly amazing to me, this mindset shift in the last 10 years away from a federal agency designed to protect and serve the community to a warrior officer mindset. And they view themselves as, and they dress themselves like they're special forces soldiers. And they, you know, put the patches and stuff on like they're, you know, this is their war is against the American citizen. I believe a lot of these DHS officers are volunteering for this duty, and they do really view themselves as coming in and being essentially, you know, the NKVD or the MVD, as it was under the Soviet Union, these paramilitary internal police forces designed to put down its citizens. And, I mean, we have to act fast on this. And it's going to take a lot more than just, you know, one or two Republican senators standing up against it. The protests in Portland increased by 20-fold. Overnight because these guys showed up.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We do have more letters. I'll get to those. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC.
Welcome back to The Roundtable panel. Ernie writes to us and says, thus far, the anonymous jungle camouflage black station wagoned paramilitaries stalking Portland, Oregon, and plucking people off the street seemingly at random have pretty much let their victims go. Our president says they're doing so wonderfully well that he threatens to unleash encores in other major cities. That reminds me that paramilitaries and death squads have roamed the world for decades, particularly below our southern border in dozens of countries, receiving well-documented training and financing from our very own CIA. I wonder how much of the CIA's budget goes into this kind of work. I wonder if the guys in Portland are going to the same training school. I wonder how long before we turn the next page. Tell me I shouldn't be thinking things like this. Malcolm?
Okay. You shouldn't be thinking things like that. First off, the CIA budget doesn't go into that. I mean, in the 80s, that stuff was called out. Paramilitary training is generally now done through cooperative effort with the Department of Defense. There are no more torture schools. I know I ran one. not a torture school. I ran a resistance to torture school. But getting back to our forces, what I see here is precisely what we always see with the Trump administration. A stupid idea being executed by stupid people using stupid lackeys that will break the law. And I personally think that this is, you know, in our litigious society, the reason they don't want these officers identified is they know that they can be held accountable personally. The reason that individuals are being let go is because, and I don't know whether you discussed this yesterday, Chad Wolf said in a Fox News interview yesterday that they are proactively arresting individuals that they suspect could be doing something. If I'm not mistaken, that was the premise of the movie Minority Report, where you predict what someone's going to do. The Constitution, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, unlawful search and seizure prohibits all of that. But this administration does not seem to care. And I think it's going to go, and here's the trouble. This could lead to death, not just of citizens, but of these agents. I mean, if someone were to roll up on me in the middle of the night, and I'm a authorized firearms carrier, you would have to wonder, what are these right-wing militias? Because last June 7th, right-wing militias dressed as police and were actually harassing people in Richmond before the police arrested them, disarmed them, and took them off the street. This is going to – what if it's an undercover policeman and they draw down or try to shoot him and they get into a gun battle? This has got to be stopped. America has never, ever come to this point before. And I tell you the truth, 10 million people should be in the streets over this subject.
Yeah, and Malcolm, you make a really good point, and I don't know if people know this or not, but you know, as a federal employee, you know, we're told in our required training that if you violate the law, you don't enjoy the sovereign immunity protections of the government. They make that real clear, and that point about the anonymous officers is spot on. That it's fear that they're going to be held accountable for actions that they know are illegal.
Can I make one last point on that, Bob? Really good point you made. Sure. You're absolutely right. They should be held accountable. The reason that these people who have been targeted on suspicion, which means that anyone can be targeted on suspicion now. Someone said yesterday they could literally go to the polls and start arresting black people in order to intimidate other people using Donald Trump's current authorization on this executive order. By the way, that executive order was written specifically to cover federal monuments and courthouses. They have expanded it to all Confederate monuments, including state and local ones. The legalities of this is they're going to just try to do it before any court can stop them without an emergency order. And as Chad Wolf said, he doesn't care whether states or governors or mayors or local city councils or individual citizens protest, whatever he thinks is going on in his head, they're going to do it. I mean, I think Chad Wolf should be the first person sued.
All right. Let's go to some other letters here, because we have many on this topic as well as others. So I would like
Well, it's good, Joe. We got through one.
Yeah, we got through one. there's a couple more. Do you think that could the deployment of camouflage federal agents deployed in our nation's cities attacking citizens opposed by mayors and governors be the beginning of a civil war? Anyone?
It depends.
I think he's trained to hold a government in place if Trump loses. I think he's practicing for that.
Alan?
I was about to say exactly the same thing. As usual, Rosemary is prescient.
I'm not going to be that sanguine. I don't think that they're training the whole government. First off, it's a very big organization, and there are very small pockets of these loyalists there. And the system doesn't work like that. It shuts off at 12 noon on January 21st. Someone will be president on that day. Mm-hmm. And if it's not Donald Trump, then, you know, it's like Nancy Pelosi said the other day, the United States government has a great history of dealing with people who trespass on government property. But I really think that this force is this. I don't want to really say it, but I can see individuals within that department who really believe that they are a Trump force, or Trump troops, as Nancy Pelosi called them yesterday, and that they may precipitate an event. I'm on a lot of gun forums, with a lot of conservatives on there. They all think that our cities are these burning heck holes that are on fire with massive tens of thousands of people rioting. That is what is being presented on Fox News, and they're reporting this as if these officers are a shock force that have been sent in to fill the holes that the police cannot handle all of these rioters in Albany, right? So I didn't see any of these people on my way to Walmart or Lowe's this morning. That's the hard, crazy reality they live in, and that is why this is happening.
So no civil war, right?
That's a lot of words, Malcolm, but it sounds like the same thing. Trump's got a force completely loyal to him, sure that they're on the side of right and protecting America, and that means keeping him in office, possibly.
I agree with you, Rosemary.
We'll go to civil war.
But I think Malcolm's also correct. It's a huge DHS is a huge organization, and so I don't want you to think that it's monolithic. It's not. Even within DHS, FEMA doesn't like the Secret Service. Secret Service doesn't like TSA. TSA doesn't like the Coast Guard. There's a lot of competition that's within that department. It has never meshed, as it has not had enough time to mesh as a single department.
How does that serve us?
And what I'm saying though is that I think that it's a minority of people in DHS and in DHS leadership and they do need to be held accountable. I will also go back to something I said a couple weeks ago. You know, we're starting to see the confluence of a lot of bad policies like cleaning out all of the IGs, the inspector generals who would typically be responsible for investigating this and going back to Congress to hold these people accountable. So you can start to see these steps. And I don't want to sound like a crazy conspiracy theorist, but Chad Wolf is able to do a lot because he knows that Bill Barr is not going to follow the law.
So here is a theory that is being put forward by Sarah, who writes and says, "Hello, brilliant panel. Maybe the unidentified thugs on steroids are actually from Blackwater, the company owned by Chris DeVos, brother of Betsy DeVos. Malcolm might be able to find out whether this is the case. What if Putin has directed Trump to employ the tactics he used in Crimea with the Green Men? And by the way, I'll bet Trump is paying Blackwater with taxpayers' money to attack their U.S. citizens. All this to quell the fears he is installing, in white suburban areas of the country, gaining back the votes he lost as a strong leader."
Okay, I don't care. I just want to say one thing. I just truly believe that this man, Trump, and the fish does stink from the head down, and go look up the word Bolshevik and see what it means. And in the words, lots of minorities have ended up running countries. Lots of minorities have ended up running countries. Tell it to Stalin. Tell it to tell it to Lenin. That's how it happens. And this is a guy, this Trump, who clearly has fascistic, totalitarian bones, and therefore don't think he won't try it, because he will.
I agree with that. But in answer to the question, I worked with Blackwater when we were in Baghdad in 2004. They weren't a scary bunch. We joked a lot about them. I was running an opposite security contract with a U.S. government intelligence agency. But it was their mindset that was absolutely horrific in Iraq. They didn't view anyone as anything other than a target that would get in their way. These aren't Blackwater people, even though, you know, Blackwater, or now acronym, whatever their name is, Academy is near Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. But they have the mindset. And this is where, again, DHS is failing. You're taking border cops who, 50% of them shouldn't be armed. We should reduce them to unarmed park ranger status. They're actually bringing park rangers, who are the law enforcement park rangers, are also being brought in and turned into these forces. So the question is, you know, how do we turn this off? I think Congress should just cut their budget now. Just say, look, you're getting no money. All right. If I see another deployment, all of your deployment money is over outside of the 10 miles of the border. You know, Nancy Pelosi hasn't played hardball yet because she's, like Obama, trying to play by the old rules with Donald Trump. And he will run a freight train through it. So it's quite possible Trump could do something and think that he's protecting the Constitution so long as Bill Barr says he is. One last thing. He also seems to have just gotten the advice from John Yoo, the professor at, is he at Stanford? The man who wrote the torture memorandum allowing us to torture people around the world has now come out and supporting Trump legally at the White House.
Exactly.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We'll continue with your letters panel at WAMC.org right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. The United States has ordered China to close its consulate in Houston by Friday, an abrupt move that opens up a new front in a battle for supremacy between the world's two biggest economies. Beijing immediately vowed to retaliate for the unprecedented escalation, leading to speculation it could order the closure of the U.S. consulate in Wuhan, which has been shuttered since the coronavirus epidemic spread across the city in January. From the Washington Post, the confrontation in the diplomatic sphere widens a conflict that already incorporated trade and technology, freedom of the press and religion, students and scientists, as well as the novel coronavirus and the race for a vaccine. Analysts on both sides say that bilateral relations are at their worst since before 1979, when the United States formally recognized the People's Republic of China. Let's go with this huge story, Alan. All right. Alan may not be with us. Bob, you want to take a crack?
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction to this, it was, I'm hoping this isn't a wag the dog scenario where I'm sort of trying to drum up a confrontation with China, sort of hides all of the other issues, including the failed COVID response and what's occurring in the cities. With that said, though, we have and continue to have huge problems with Chinese hackers. What I'm finding interesting, and I don't know if Malcolm, if you have any thoughts on this, is Russia was doing the same thing, and we didn't do anything to them, or at least publicly, we haven't done anything the way we have with China, and I'm sort of puzzled as to why the difference.
Malcolm,
well, first off, because it's China and Trump, as we know, for the last month has been on this big political push to tie Joe Biden to China, which of course is laughable. But it's working well with his base by using the racist phrase Chinese virus. Another thing is that, you know, China does use consulates. Many countries use their consulates for intelligence collection. And this is intellectual property collection. And it wouldn't be unusual for any government like Russia to actually intercept, you know, microwave towers, telephone communications related to intellectual property. I'm not sure what the specific target in Houston would be, but obviously they think that they collate data there and transmit that on to Beijing. Beijing has the capability. They don't need to be physically in the United States, to tell you the truth. But I suspect what the next push that Trump will make is to say China is going to steal our COVID secrets and, you know, for the vaccine that we're producing. As I understand it, only Oxford University and University of Wisconsin are reporting any success with a coronavirus vaccine. So, again, you know, wag the dog maybe, but I don't think it'll lead to anything other than, you know, the Chinese closing an American embassy, most likely in Hong Kong, which really will hurt people. But what does Donald Trump care? Nothing.
Rosemary?
Well, I mean, in listening to all the discussion, I cannot help, as we probably all can, to think of the lost opportunity. Had there been a different administration, relations with China would have been at the top of the list of our foreign policy concerns. Obama tried to make that so. But now it's just become another potential Cold War instead of joining forces with and molding the number two power into a real partner. We're in the same situation that we were with Russia, and there was no need for it. And I just, the irony of his, of Trump trying to connect Biden to failed policy in China is just overwhelming, starting with the trade agreement that he got rid of right away as soon as he got into office, his bungling of the trade war so that we now as taxpayers are supporting our own farmers so they don't feel the effect of his ridiculous policies towards China. It all could have played out differently. We have ceded power and authority and influence to China needlessly.
Alan.
Chinese people are yellow, whereas Russian people are white, basically. And therefore, this racist president sees an opportunity here. Also, he is in bed with the Russians. I don't think there's any two ways about it. We've seen it from the very beginning. When the great history book is written, we're going to find out all about that.
When you look at this policy, of course, with Beijing now saying retaliation, what would that look like, Malcolm?
I think closing Hong Kong is a big deal. That would hurt us and help them. I think Malcolm's right about that.
Well, China eats our lunch every day. So, you know, what it could do is it could only damage us more economically. Further to what Alan said, we should have been, you know, in any administration, and hopefully in January when there's another administration, this needs to be a global unified effort to save the world from this virus. This isn't a proprietary vaccine that we can hoard and hide from people like hydrochloroquine. It's ridiculous. This is killing us physically and economically due to Trump's racism and selfishness. Sorry, Bob.
Bob.
No, I think you're spot on. I also am concerned, though, about continued Chinese aggression in the seas, that are shared close to India and then close to Vietnam. I'm also really concerned with Taiwan, and I think the Chinese are probably going to be a more aggressive, recognizing our inherent weakness right now, and particularly in light of the upcoming election. And Malcolm, I think you're spot on that economically the Chinese are going to punish us for this activity. With the same thing, I don't want anybody to think that the Chinese are victims here. They are not. They have stolen so much of our intellectual property that they have been able to jump decades in development because of what they've been able to do.
But had you had an actual real negotiator in the White House, that might have been different. You might have shared that technology, traded it for some actual gain. They're still getting our technology, and what are we getting instead?
Yeah, I mean, you don't think that Peter Navarro and Ivanka Trump are the
voice pieces? Yeah, you're right. Stupid me. I forgot that.
All right. Let's go to another story this morning, and we'll go back to the virus and talk a little bit about what is happening as far as the budget plan. I would like to talk about the because we haven't focused solely on this. We've been talking about the other plan, but we haven't spoken or the overall plan, but we haven't spoken about the $600 unemployment bonus. There's an article in the New York Times this morning saying that the end of that bonus could push millions back to the past the brink. A weekly supplement has helped the jobless to pay their bills and cushion the economy as it expires, which it will do at the end of this month. Congress will determine what comes next. When millions of Americans began losing their jobs in March, the federal government stepped in with a life preserver, $600 a week in extra unemployment benefits to allow workers to pay rent and buy groceries and to cushion the economy. With economic conditions again deteriorating, that life preserver will disappear within days if Congress doesn't act to extend it. That could prompt a wave of evictions and inflict more financial harm on millions of Americans while further damaging the economy. Even the threat of a lapse in benefits could prove harmful, economists warn, by forcing households to make precautionary spending cuts. Meanwhile, there is a lot of talk that maybe we shouldn't do this because it is an incentive for people not to work. That is from some members of the administration. Economists warn that it isn't just individual recipients who will suffer, though. If the benefits are cut, the federal payments are injecting billions of dollars into the economy each week, money that flows to landlords, grocery stores, retailers, and countless other businesses. Congress returned from recess this week to consider a new relief package, which could include at least a partial extension of the extra unemployment benefits. Senate Republicans in the White House are considering a roughly $1 trillion package that would retain the program but scale it back. Democrats are pressing to continue paying the full $600 a week.
Ted Cruz says, we haven't got the money. Oh, we got the money for aircraft carriers. We've got the money for all the rest of the stuff. But we haven't got the money, says Ted Cruz. And I think there's a hot place waiting for him at some point. Nevertheless, this is going to have to be duked out because the Republican Party, if they refuse to go along, it reminds me so much of the French Revolution. Was that right, you historians, in which they didn't want to open up the storehouse and it cost them everything? I think that that's where we are right now. It's awful.
Rosemary?
I am unnerved by how up to the wire that this is all going. I understand that it's probably a ploy by Nancy Pelosi to put lots of pressure on, but people are going to suffer. They are not staying out of work because they get more money to stay out of work, or if they are, that's a very short-term solution. They need to get money to people, or things are going to begin to shut down in ways that this economy has yet to see. I don't understand how that benefits Trump, why he would let it go. So it seems that he's just bluffing too, I think. But we're going right to the wire, and people's lives and their futures are at stake. They're trying to make economic decisions now. Most of these benefits expire at the end of this month, and that's just a few days away. I hate our government. What can I say? the way they work is just horrible in every way.
Well, you know, the other thing about this, too, is that I was reading an interesting article which said that so many people have applied for these benefits. A lot of people haven't even received them yet. They're robbing Peter to pay Paul right now in the hopes that they're going to get this money that they know is going to expire. But people who have been unemployed for a month or 2 months still haven't even seen their first payment yet and are just waiting. And to have that happen on top of, at least that money will hopefully be retroactive, but then for it to be cut off when they start getting regular payments, seems really frightening.
Yeah, and Joe, you know, you're right. They are absolutely playing with people's lives right now. And Ted Cruz, I can tell you where to find the money. Rescind the tax breaks that you gave for the wealthy and corporations. I mean, I'm sorry, but again, this is another one of the failed Trump policies that has secondary and tertiary effects.
Defund the paramilitary.
Yes.
Defund ICE.
Yeah,
that's where you get the money. There's money everywhere.
The other point, though, is that I think this is the start of a GOP pivot back to fiscal responsibility, recognizing that they may be losing the White House and potentially the Senate. So now what they're going to do is start to throw roadblocks in front of a potential Democratic administration by not being able to fund their policies.
Ted Cruz's quote was of the GOP proposal, "I'm not only a no, I'm a hell no." So what is this talk about, Alan? If you could give us some insight into the fraction or the friction rather between we talk about the friction and the factions of the Republican Party that are coming out as this fight goes on.
Well, I think there are a couple of things here. First of all, is the division between the president, who clearly wants to be reelected. And if you don't put some money on the table for some of the folks who are going to be hurting so badly, this president is in bad shape. So he's got to talk to the outliers in the Republican Party. Somebody asked why he was playing, golf with Lindsey Graham yesterday. Well, that's why. He needs Lindsey Graham and he needs all of the others, because if he doesn't get them, he's just out of luck.
I do love the comment from Jimmy Fallon that Lindsey Graham is as close to a lapdog as Trump has ever had. I mean, and I actually think that is very, very fitting.
Well, he knows it. You know, Graham knows it. And every once in a while, we've all watched it, he comes out with an anti-Trumpian utterance of some kind. And people say, oh, well, you know, he's not so bad after all. But I think Fallon's right.
Yeah, and Jamie Harrison is running a very, very competitive race against Lindsey in South Carolina. If folks haven't taken a look at some of those polling, it's very, very interesting.
And Rosemary, about the splits in the Republican Party and what this debate shows us?
Oh, I don't think it means anything. All talk of pivots and splits is just hopeful thinking on the part of us, I think. They have thrown in with Trump. It's too late for them to pivot to anything else. They're in it and hoping that they hold things together and that Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies.
Let's go to some letters. Joseph says, when they compare Trump and Biden, they say people think Trump is better for the economy. Can someone tell me what Trump has done to deserve that credit?
That's easy. He glided in on the Obama-Biden economy and wrote it hard and made this mythology to his base. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. But that's his shtick, is that, you know, he's a businessman. And that, you know, shows the vapidity of our culture, that we will believe whatever we're told, you know, against all facts.
I remember from algebra class, wasn't there a proposition that went something like Republicans equals economy. So no matter what the Democrats do, no matter what they deliver, there will be a class in this country who believe that the Republicans are the only ones who care about the economy.
Mm.
Yeah, and I mean, the great lie that has been accepted by at least 30% of the population is that he's a successful businessman. You know, and yeah. I will go back to the fact that he bankrupted a casino. He bankrupted a steak company in a country that eats more steak than anybody else in the world. He bankrupted a university. He bankrupted an airline. And in each of those situations, he screwed the working people. He absolutely did, out of their future and what was owed them. And yet he's being held up as some sort of savior. And I just don't, I honestly, I struggle with understanding that.
Bob, if we eat more steak than any place in the world, we also eat more BS than any place in the world. And Trump is a master at that. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's branding and BS. And he's got that down. And we have bought it hook, line, and sinker.
I don't know that we eat the BS. I think we make it.
Well, the bulls make it. Right. Carol says, I've not been happy about the unemployment benefits since I found out the husband of a coworker lost one day a week at his job. That one job entitled him to a $600 bonus each week and an extra bonus of a three-day weekend. By the way, under normal circumstances, he does not actually earn $600 per day. He's making more now than before COVID. Where's the equity in that? I don't know. Obviously, there are a lot of stories like the one that Carol is telling, but there still are a lot of people who are trying to, yes, feed their families and make ends meet. And I don't know that there is a one-size-fits-all solution to that. But so I don't know how you counter stories like this.
Well, clearly, when you're doing this much for so many people, there will be some people, you know, who beat the system. But the real question is not whether there are some, but how many,
right,
percentage-wise. Yeah. I mean, are you feeding people who need to be fed? And are you keeping, frankly, the lid on the American democracy and republic? Because I think we are. I think we are by doing this. I would hate to see what happens if that money gets cut off.
And, you know, Joe, it's stunning to me the fact that, you know, how we always think about welfare and welfare cheats as being poor working people. And then we absolutely ignore the excesses of corporations that get billions and billions of dollars. And I'll point to the failures of Boeing and their continued government subsidies. And this is that old trope against welfare, and it has worked for generation after generation, and frankly, it's sad. Now, I would say this to everybody to think about, though. The European Union, I thought, had a much better approach to how they were taking care of coronavirus, including how they were covering payroll in order to keep money going, running through their system. I think we really missed an opportunity to copy something that was successful at the time and has proven to be way more successful than anything we've done.
Anybody else?
Blanche Plank's course in Hunter College in political science, and three guys used to get up, and I never quite understood what they were talking about, but I do now. They would always be talking about heterogeneity and homogeneity, heterogeneity and homogeneity. This country is not the European Union, that's for sure. And this is a president who would rather cut his hands off then say, let's take a page out of somebody else's book.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think that burnt us. I really do, because I think their approach to the payroll taxes and their whole approach to overcoming coronavirus is much smarter than what we're doing.
Betsy has two questions for us before we go to a break. I am among those who will be unable to pay my mortgage if and when our supplemental employment benefits cancel next week. What specifically does the panel think will happen to these benefits? Two, who determines the order in which people receive the new vaccine once it is released? Two very different questions there, but both important. Who would like the...
Good questions. First of all, there'll be plenty of people who don't want the vaccine. We know that already.
Yep.
The anti-vaxxers, that they won't want it. I don't think the big question is who gets it first. I think the big question is, will enough people take it, right? The other question, Joe, was...
About the benefits, about what happens, benefits. what will happen to the benefits?
They're gonna make sure that the benefits continue. There's no question in my mind about it. The benefits will continue. You know, it's political suicide if you don't, and they'll do it.
Yeah, and right now I think this is just a typical game of chicken that's being played both among and between the GOP members, but also between the House and the Senate. So I agree with
Absolutely.
Alan. I think that there's a whole bunch of senators right now that are now on the fence when they thought they had absolutely secure seats, and they can't afford to alienate their own populations.
And meanwhile, Rosemary, your point I think is well taken. We have about 20 seconds here, but we are playing it very close to the wire, and it's very unnerving.
Yeah, it's true. We're just messing with people's lives, and even if they end up doing the right thing, it's people are biting their nails right now trying to figure out how to balance a checkbook that's empty.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have our last round with our panelists this morning. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Last call with our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary R. Mayo. All right, let's go to other stories that we can talk about this morning and that I would like to talk about this morning. And one of the stories that is also, we've been talking about the $600 of the overall budget plan and as that goes, I would like to talk about the census for a moment. And the questions there, the Trump administration is seeking to bar undocumented immigrants from a portion of the 2020 census. They signaled, the president signed a memorandum on Tuesday in support of barring undocumented immigrants from being counted for congressional apportionment next year. Doing so, he said, would represent a, quote, better understanding of the Constitution, end quote, than the way apportionment has been implemented for over two centuries. Quote, for the purpose of the reapportionment of representatives following the 2020 census, it's the policy of the United States to exclude from the apportionment base aliens who are not in a lawful immigration status to the maximum extent feasible and consistent with the discretion delegated to the executive branch, that according to the memo.
As the just hired as a census enumerator, can I start on that one?
Yes, please.
Okay, so he's not going to win this one. When he swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, it doesn't mean to improve and change it. It means to uphold it as it's been interpreted for two centuries. So he'll lose this, but in the meantime, he's going to scare off even more people, more immigrants, who are going to rightly think that they're targeted if they answer the census. So I can't wait to see the training, which supposedly is coming up next week, in a week or 2 weeks, to see how we're supposed to handle something like this. I think the census is going to be a mess this year because he has been messing with it since the minute he got into office. And while the courts have struck him down, they do it in a way that doesn't stop the intimidation that he's allowed to infest the whole place. It's what he's done with the Constitution all along. I thought the Emoluments Clause was pretty clear, and here we have Donald Trump as president telling his ambassador, get me the British Open at my Scotland course. That's not using your own power in government to enrich yourself. I'm also enraged by the latest Washington Post story about how he has systematically and at great volume divested money from his campaign funding into his private businesses.
Right.
This is a horrible man. He is a danger to the Constitution. I think we've said that before.
All I can say is the trials next year are going to be epic.
Well, they're all going to be forgotten. Yeah. We do not try people who have been removed from our political past. When Zinkel, the former Interior Secretary, goes on trial, then I'll change my mind about that.
Joe, it's funny, and
I
deeply appreciate all of the panda and cat videos that people are sending me, because apparently I sound very, very tense right now, and I'm getting asked, you know, is it as bad as it sounds? And in some respects, it is. But at the same time, as you listen to all of these issues, realize that we still have the power to change what's going on in this country. But more than ever, this needs to be a call for all of us who have probably been very apolitical in the past to become political and make sure that the people we're electing to represent us do what they're supposed to be doing. So as depressing as some of these topics are, it is incredibly important that you understand what's going on and that there is collective action. And thank you for the videos.
Who's sending you videos?
I have people texting me asking whether they need to send me help and stuff.
But I'm back. Whatever it's worth.
Oh, you're back, Alan. You're back.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
I hope so. No one.
Yeah. We can hear you. Alan, can we hear you? All right. All right, we'll pause there. Malcolm, were you going to add to that?
No.
Okay. let's go to letters then. Keith says, if someone is making more on the unemployment, the employer is not paying them a fair wage. Isn't this what we should be discussing? Well, yes, right? That is what we should be discussing.
You know, there's a lot of things we should be discussing, but to be quite frank, and this is where the public disconnect with regards to what's happening to us as a national crisis is, frankly, it's terrifying. We are in the middle of what was a controllable, virus that with proper mitigation, we could have stopped this thing in, you know, February and March. Now we're at the point where the country doesn't care. Large swaths don't care. I just saw a Chiron on MSNBC right now saying Florida's nursing homes are at a Category 5 crisis, like a hurricane, and that they've had a fivefold increase in deaths in the last 3 weeks. Look, you know, the economy will eventually come back. People will have to get to work. But this virus could break us economically. It could have a multi-year sustained increase where we lose hundreds of thousands of U.S. citizens out of rank stupidity. And so, you know, I love the dynamics of these little discussions about should I get this? We're going to have to spend whatever it takes and do whatever it takes to knock this down. And Republicans are incapable of doing that until it affects them and their families.
Good point. Alan, are you back? Okay. All right. Sorry about that. We're trying to get Alan back on. He was with us, and then we lost the connection. So the engineers are working hard to get him back on, and
I can hear Joe. Joe, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great, I'm back.
Excellent.
Thanks to the cracked engineering. Thanks to the cracked engineering department we have. They're wonderful. I mean, crack engineering. Department.
Yes, there you go. They're doing wonderful work in there, and so they got us.
As they always do.
Yes. All right. Anything you wanted? Well, you probably didn't hear what we were talking about, did you? Or did you?
Not a word.
Okay.
Not
all right. Okay. I just wanted to check. Let's go
can
to
I,
a new.
Can I just mention this? Can I just mention my friend David Corkery gave me a column from today's Washington Post, for whatever it's worth, not to interject anything. Ray gets furious with me when I do this, but it's about NPR and about NPR's troubles and how they're way over budget and they don't know what to do about it. And it's working itself out quite badly. And we here at WAMC, of course, Joe, get very worried when this kind of thing happens, when they can't watch what they're doing, because inevitably they come back to us and try to make it up out of what we are doing here. And it is really the worst kind of fiscal mismanagement, in my opinion. So there I've gone and said it. Now I'll shut up.
You've gone and said it. All right, let me go back, and I'm going to try to find the letters that I had just moments ago that now have disappeared off my screen. There we go. We go to Bo, who says, sure, so many people need some assistance just to get by until things improve and they can pay their rent, and at least he got us a living. But what is money? It is essentially an IOU. It is nothing by itself. Even before the present crisis, there was not enough real wealth to support the combined debt of almost every business. Corporations included in every local, state, and federal debt, and not only America, but just about every nation in the world. What will there be left to tax after all this to support the paper promises? A good economic question. Anyone want to tackle that?
Well, we do owe a great deal of money. And when you borrow money, you have to pay vigorous. You have to pay interest on that. And this country has borrowed enough so that we can support all kinds of military stuff that we shouldn't be supporting. You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have a military. I'm saying it's in excess of what we ought to have. There's no doubt. We have borrowed a lot of money, and somebody is making money as a result of that, as we all know. And usually that comes down to the people on the street and the bankers.
Sean taking us to task. What has Trump done? ? Unemployment way down. Black unemployment way down. Job creation, stock market up. Regulations cut so the economy could boom. Obama did none of that. Trump will win in a landslide like the Republicans because of that. That from Sean.
Stepping in as an intelligence professional with decades of experience here, you people need to start dealing in facts. Whoever wrote that, you are living in an alternate reality where none of what you said is correct within the context. Obama did none of that. Obama did all of that. All of it. And Trump stepped into the footsteps.
Now it's all gone. I don't know if you've noticed, 40 million people are unemployed. Highest black unemployment rates in decades. I mean, get back to reality, people.
Bob. Not people, person. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I am in absolutely complete agreement, and I think just the opposite. I think as things stand right now, not only do the Democrats win the White House, they have an excellent chance of taking back the Senate as well. I think the silent majority out there is so fed up with the garbage that's come out of this Republican administration that there will be changes. So I don't think Trump is going to win in a landslide.
This man has it. I'm sorry, Rosemary, go ahead.
Okay, I just want to say that I think that there's a significant portion, a powerful portion, let me say, if not numbers significant, then in power, who's very happy with what Trump has done and has promised to continue doing, cutting taxes, cutting regulations so that basically we're back to the days of industrial barons, putting extremely conservative people in every place in the judiciary so that business interests are very protected. We see this in the ongoing happy stock market, despite the sort of unemployment and drop in wages that people are suffering under. This is not normal.
And going back to Malcolm's comment for just for one second, Joe, you know, people need to remember the history of the economy that the Obama administration inherited, and actually the amazing work that the Obama administration and the Fed did in order to not only keep the economy going, but to strengthen it. And the glide path of the economy coming out of the Obama administration to the Trump administration was strong. It was growing. It had nothing but power behind it. Trump inherited the best possible situation a president could inherit in a modern economy.
All right. We are
like he did from his dad. And he ruined it.
We'll let that be the parting shot. My thanks to everybody for being with us this morning. We are out of time. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks,
glad
guys.
We got you back. Malcolm Nance, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, thank you. We'll return with the Congressional Corner right after this.